So we're going to take some time for question and answers with Kevin and Stella. So we're going to invite you guys to come on up here. Yeah. On the hot seat. Everybody see them okay? So we've tried this before with other missionaries, and I think it's gone over okay. And so they'll ask some questions, and I'll repeat it so it's recorded, and then you guys are... So who wants to begin tonight with a question for Kevin and Stella? Jan?
Kevin, you deal with a lot of people, the mayor being one of them. How do they view you as a outsider?
Is there
not Filipino, or is there any...
Yeah, there's two...
Before I answer. Jan's asking... with the contact that Kevin has had with the mayor in Manila, how do the government officials view him coming to them?
Okay. There's it can be done two different ways. It can be seen as shame, that we're shaming them into getting some action, or it's a privilege or an honor that I'm there. We were trying to really again, we talked about the poor not having a voice, but with having us as missionaries and being a voice, it could be heard. And actually, his reception to us was quite positive, but he did a very political move in that he redirected us to another office. And like I said, at that office, the first gentleman was very accommodating and wanted to help, but then the person above him, he saw it as more shame and attacking, and so he took a reverse reaction to it and then decided, no, I'm going to give him less. And his whole response was that if they really are bad off, they can go live with someone else or go with other families. It's not our mayor's concern or this office's concern. So it was very opposite reactions that came out of it. Our only strong desire was to kind of, again, maybe use my whiteness, my white privilege, as we hear so often. But it was more just to try and speak for our people and say, this is legitimate, this is true, this is what we're seeing, and we're just here to... if there's any kind of help. So we came out as a can you help, not as you need to be helping these people and you need to be making a difference. You are the mayor. You need to fix this. We weren't attacking, but we are again trying to say, this is the truth. This is a situation that we're under. Can you help? So,
okay. Janice?
I was thinking about that. I should.
Okay, before you do that. Janice is asking, it's not going to get picked up on the recording, asking about the sand that you mentioned this morning, a widow needing or gathering sand. Can you explain what that was all about?
Okay. To make cement, you need cement, sand, and gravel. And so, as I had said earlier, the construction materials within, I guess I also explained that. It's Philippines was taken by the Spanish quite early on in the 1600s, I believe. And they have a different style of dividing up the land. So they have situates and barangays, and they're smaller pieces and pieces. And they do a lot of closed communities. So where our particular church is inside another closed community. So we actually have one closed community. You get into that closed community, and then you go into our closed community, which is where Faith Academy is located. So it's like going through separate locking systems. And for her, she can't get a lot of construction material because, again, as a widower, she doesn't have a lot of finances. So this sand was going to help her save money, but she still needed to get it from our community, which is in one closed subdivision out to another closed subdivision to bring it into a third closed subdivision. So we actually had the transport worked out because we have partnered with Faith Academy to get a construction vehicle, and one of our church members works for Faith Academy and is signed off to drive the construction truck, and he's volunteering his time every Sunday to do that, to move the materials. But she needed to get her sand from across the river up the hill to where the truck could pick it up, and that was her struggle at that point, to be able to put it on the construction vehicle to get it over to her site, and then she'd need to get sand and then make cement and then be able to do all the blocks to build up. But she was a long ways away. She was still at sand. She hadn't got to, I mean, that sand had not gotten to the...
So you helped carry buckets of sand?
It was, they were rice bags, and they were, yeah, they were, hey, you know, those 50 kilo rice sacks that we did for 16 months, they were no picnic either. That was 110 pounds. I'll tell you, at the end, we were doing two-man lift. We decided it's a two-man lift. It's no longer a single-person lift. But, yeah. Yes, I did move some, and then I did.
He actually climbed up the river wall, was over there, and he was doing a lot of it with all the youth from our church.
But you do what you have to do.
Yes. Yeah, very good. Another question, Audrey.
What is your support level at?
Audrey's asking what your support level is at.
Right. Ours, that's, it depends on whose criteria you go by. I think as far as the missions criteria, we're about 70%, but we've been at 70% for 20 years, so... We feel like that's probably 100 for us. But God provides. So we're always amazed from where, when we think we're losing, another person comes alongside and picks it up. So yeah, we honestly, our last furlough, didn't think we were going back, but God worked it out that we could go back. And we've always said that we'll keep serving as long as the Lord keeps sending. So we trust Him.
Okay, very good. Jan?
I don't know what you do at Faith Academy, so I'd like to know, Stella, and what your typical day is.
Jan's asking what you work at Faith Academy. What's your typical day?
Kevin and I are both special educators. And I run the middle school department, and he runs the high school department. School at Faith normally starts at 7 in the morning, and we're done by 2:40. And then we both coach after that. We coach different things. And then the kids, the high school kids, we coach high school. They go on home on vans to their where they live. Of course, during COVID, that was very different. And we were locked down in March of 2020, went online, stayed online for 2 years. With a little glip bit at the end, March 2021, at the end, no, 2022, 2021, yeah, what are we now? March 2022, yeah. So we were able to go back hybrid for a few months there, where we had kids part-time. So during COVID, it was very different. We were online all day long with our kids because maybe 2 or 3% of our special ed kids did really well with online learning because those were our slow processors who were able to take their time and just work. And they didn't have any teacher saying, stop, start, stop. They just did their work, and they did great. The rest of our kids that struggled didn't do so well. So we would have to do calls and remind them and reteach things and show them how to do things on their computer. And thankfully, Faith let us bring kids on campus once the government kind of lightened a little bit and said kids can go to specialist appointments. They deemed us as specialists. And so then we were able to bring kids on for the mornings, and we would all sit outside with their masks on, and they didn't have to wear their face shields, just their masks, and they would work on their computers, and I could run around and kind of keep them on target. We both did that for on and off, depending on the government level. But anyway, that's what we do. We work with kids that learn differently. Kevin teaches sometimes every subject. I usually just do math and English and then push into classes to help kids within the middle school.
And just to
go on.
Stella usually gets them all the good study habits and prepares them. And then I take over at high school and just make sure they graduate and push through and get out and do a lot of negotiating with the teachers and setting benchmarks that are achievable. Also, I'm OIC, which is the officer in charge, and that starts from when school closes until it opens at 7 a.m., which means I'm on call if there's an emergency, like a typhoon would knock out the power, so I would turn on the generators so that the computers, the network wouldn't go down, or they'd lose medicine that's in the fridge. So I would do that. We also do kind of member care groups. We have a couples group that we meet with once a week, and also Stella has the ladies that she meets with once a week, and I have some other men that we meet once a week. So
you start so early?
Traffic. Manila traffic. If they started later, then everything that would have taken what takes now an hour would take 2 to 3 hours. And so they don't, they try to get ahead of the morning traffic.
Yes. Elena.
Yes, for the online learning, did you have graduate students to help access?
How do you get your students access to online learning?
So Faith Academy was established over 60 years ago as a school for missionary children. And in that, most of the families would have at least one computer at home. And over the last 10 years or so, we've switched to where we have Chromebooks at school, which are much, much cheaper. And then we handed those out to the students that didn't have. Their parents had to come to the Faith down at the gate. They couldn't come on campus because the government shut us down, right? Everything had to close down. So our IT department worked out who needed Chromebooks, and the parents could come up and pick up their Chromebooks for their children and sign them out. Then that's our kids that we teach at Faith. We also have a Filipino employee staff, and what the school decided to do was give Chromebooks to those employees because they couldn't afford to buy them in case their kids would go to online learning in the public schools. So they gave one to each family then, so they're, because that was kind of a ridiculous request because most Filipino children would not have a computer at home. So our kids are in a little different bracket because they're missionary kids. So usually their family has one computer. And this way the school allowed them to have one each so the kids didn't have to share. Our church kids, it was very different. Unless their family could get a lot of our kids were doing school on their cell phone. We bought a number of cell phones for high school kids that were trying to finish, and the only way they could finish was on a cell phone. We couldn't afford to buy Chromebooks for everybody. Anytime people would give them to us, we would pass them on. But even then, they have to access internet. There's just a lot. So through a cell phone, they could do that much cheaper. So the Lord provided for us to buy phones for a few kids that were in their senior years or junior senior years and really wanting to finish school. And they did. So anyway, two different situations, but yeah.
Okay. Joe?
Hey, Joe. Who's doing your job while you're not there?
Yeah. He
oh, Joe's asking Kevin, who's doing his job while they're not there?
We have a strong team. We are... Pastors, he got saved through the youth ministry, and we put him through Bible college. And he's been, well, he's had a hard start because he was very shy. But since he's gotten over his shyness, he's excellent, a servant's heart. He actually, you could pray for him because I did a really, looking back, I put him in an awkward position in that he became the go-between the government, the real estate lady, and the community. And so he was being constantly bombarded by the community to say, what's happening? When are we going to move? and he was being bombarded by the regulations and the stipulations of the government and getting caught in the middle between the two. He actually had to move out of the community and live with his brother. Looking back, I regret that I did that, put that much pressure on him. And if I could, I would like to have changed it, but he's now running the church. We also have other members who are running Bible studies while we're gone, part of that we're mentoring with both Stella and I. We kind of got them going, and then once they realize how they much is dependent more on God than us, they did fine with continuing on while we're gone. So yeah, we have definitely partnered with people in the community, and they're taking care of our church at this point. And Stella's getting messages, I'm getting messages, and we're still trying to keep in communication and do as much as we can from here.
And as far as Faith Academy goes, we really didn't have anybody coming in to take over our position, so we had a lot of very anxious parents, but I had somebody come in part-time, really days before school started. They still don't have anybody in high school, so we have some problems there that we're having to email back and forth and still work from here to help our students, especially his guys. It's more important in high school because everything counts, you know, middle school, yeah, you know, but high school's really important. So yeah, we're doing a lot of, we're still there kind of.
So yeah, the church is doing great. Faith is, they need to take care of themselves, I think.
All right, Joe, another one?
Explain why I called you Joe, and is that helping you now?
Explain why he called you Joe, and is that helping you?
Okay, I can explain why you called me Joe, is because same reason I call a lot of Filipinos Phil. With the World War II, a lot of GIs liberated the Philippines, and most Filipinos call us Joe. Yeah, and so we usually say, oh, hey, Phil. And I don't know exactly if it's helping me, but I do understand the reference.
Very good. Thank you. Jan, again?
When and if you retire, will you go to Japan? Can I say something?
When and if you retire, will you go to Japan? Or the States or Canada? Is that what you asked?
Which person are you asking?
We're not retiring.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if we don't retire, but if we do, it would be Canada. But it would have to be a compromise somewhere along the line as to where.
All right. Good political answer. Anything else? Yes, Elena? Okay, you mentioned this morning about some hostilities between groups, being jealous of what the other group is doing. And then I didn't hear the rest of the question. Do you ever feel threatened in the Philippines because of that? To say that you're going to come back to Canada? Okay.
When you build a relationship with people in the community, we don't feel threatened by them anymore, because we become part of their family. Same thing happened when we lived in the tribe. They were always watching our back. If we were making wrong moves, like going where the New People's Army might be, they would tell us, don't go there, don't go there. Y'all don't need to go there. And we're like, why? You know, because there's rebels there. Don't go there. Oh, okay. So, I mean, that's kind of what God does, right? When you get to know the people, he takes care of us. There's a lot of threats in the Philippines. Y'all that have been there know what I'm talking about. Like, there's problems there. There's a lot of poverty. So there's a lot of people that are hungry, so then they'll pickpocket you or that kind of thing. People do die sometimes in those situations. We don't feel like that in our informal settler community anymore, because we've been working in there 15 years. they know we love them. We're part of their family. You know, we know that they know we've got their backs and we know they've got ours. We did feel a bit more careful during COVID because the president was very outspoken in his threats against foreigners. And it was really important that we do not spread anything in the community because it would have been not good for us if we had, because they don't have a strong medical system. He knows that. He was trying to protect his people. I'm not bad-mouthing him. He was trying to protect his people. We have a terrible medical system there for public folks, you know, for regular folks. We have some really fancy hospitals. If we could go there because we have insurance, but most people don't go there, right? So they were terrified as to what might happen if it swept through the country. So we were careful-ish in not being visual with what we were doing, making sure when we were giving rice and stuff out, we were away from the roads, away from places we could be seen. And still, we tried very hard to remind the people to wear masks because the government said that. We tried to keep our social distance because the government said to do that. I think that was probably the most careful we've ever been, because there was sort of a real threat from him spoken directly to foreigners saying, if you do this, you'll be in trouble, you know. So,
and we did go through the local government unit. So when we started the rice distribution, we contacted the barangay captain in the community to say, do you want us to? And because they were desperate, the answer was yes. But we made sure we, again, used our own church people and that they were the ones that were visibly the ones that were doing the handing out. And we try to, again, keep a lower profile. But we did make sure, like, tracts were handed out, that the gospel was still, again, with all of the feeding, it wasn't to meet the physical need. It was to meet the physical need so they could have the spiritual need met. It wasn't a social gospel. I know that we hear that a lot. And that's always throughout the whole time was we want to be respectful to the government because there was threat that if COVID did get in there, we would have been held responsible, which we knew we couldn't take on. But we made sure we talked to the local government and that we had most of our people doing most of the giving, and we worked through them. So, yes, it is a concern, but like Stella says, when it actually comes to the community, they tend to know us, and they tend to know that we're there not to harm but to benefit, and that gains a lot of respect with everyone.
All right, very good. Good questions. Any others? Y'all questioned out? Are you answered out? Delvis? Yeah. Delvis is asking whether the people you work with speak English, or do you have to learn their language?
So we're with Ethnos Canada, which used to be New Tribes Mission. We're all about learning the language of the people and teaching in their language, their heart language. So we learned Tagalog when we first arrived there 20 years ago. We teach in English at Faith Academy. So our church is Tagalog. Pero we also speak English with some of them too. Like they can do what we call Taglish, but our church, we preach and teach in Tagalog to the local people. We reached proficiency level to go on to our tribe and stuff, but we're getting old. And teaching in the Bible in Tagalog we do, but it's mahirap talaga, which means really hard, because it's a different language. Bible language is different than conversational language, and even the Bible, when the people are reading it, sometimes they'll be like, I've never seen that word before. You know, they don't even know it in their own language, and so then we look back to English, and I try and think of a simpler Tagalog word that we know would match that, and then they're like, oh, okay. So sometimes Bible language is deeper than conversation. Yes, you guys understand? Yeah, we say malalim talaga, like it's really deep. So Neither of us would go around saying we want to preach in Tagalog all day. No, it's hard, but we definitely the church is in Tagalog.
Can you quote John 3:16 in your?
No, I have to read it.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I don't remember. 56.
Sorry, I'll erase that question from the recording.
Erase that question.
Anything else? Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for being with us this day. We've enjoyed the morning. We've enjoyed lunch. We enjoyed the afternoon with you guys at our place. And we want to wish you all the best and God's blessing in the days ahead. We continue to pray for you. And we'll trust the Lord that we can continue in our financial support for you guys as well. Thank you.
And we want to say thank you to you guys for being with us through the long haul. Amazing.
Yeah, 20 years. That's a long time. You're getting old. No, I'm not getting old. Thank you for good questions and for interaction with Kevin and Stella.